Welcome to the EcoRight Speaks podcast, where we discuss climate change from a right-of-center, free enterprise, innovation perspective. Every week, we feature guests who have insights into climate solutions that make sense. I'm Bob Inglis of RepublicEN.org. We're conservatives who care about climate. We see opportunities ahead in solving climate change for America and the whole world. And now, here's the host of the show, Chelsea Henderson.
Listeners, welcome to season 12. As our fearless leader, Bob, just indicated, I am Chelsea Henderson, host of this show, which makes me your guide for a journey into conversations centered around climate policy, advocacy, and leadership, with an emphasis, of course, on the community we foster, the EcoRight. We are back from our between season hiatus, ready to rock and roll with our 12th season of the show. And boy, do we have a great conversation to kick things off. Bob Eccles is a leading authority on how companies and investors can create sustainable strategies through the integration of environmental, social, and governance factors in resource allocation decisions. The focus of his work is how on capital markets can contribute to ensuring a sustainable society for generations to come. Bob is also the author of numerous publications, including his most recent book, An American's Guide to Climate Change, How America Can Lead and Prosper. Listeners, I cannot think of a better time for a book like this to be available. A fierce advocate for those of us who live in this EcoRight ecosystem, Bob understands the need for bipartisanship and also recognizes that the climate challenge presents great opportunities to showcase American innovation, ingenuity, and leadership. As a special treat, we will be giving away three copies of his latest book. So stay tuned until the end of the show to find out how you can be entered to win a copy of An American's Guide to Climate Change, How America Can Lead and Prosper. And with that, listeners, I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation with Bob Eccles as much as I enjoyed having it. Listeners, at the end of 2025, we had a little fundraising push. We don't do this often, but once a year, we just ask for a small contribution as your token of support for us and our work. And this year, we said we would give shout outs to those who donated $50 or more during our year-end challenge. And I'm here to give those shout outs. We have John Backlund, Rob Beggs, Bill Bray, Brett Sees, Elizabeth Fenner. Elizabeth, thank you so much. You get an extra shout out. I'm going to try to not murder this name, but Jim Jibutowski. Sorry if I got that wrong, Jim. We appreciate you. James Hernaway, Larry Howe, our dear friend, Bill Hurley, another friend, Jane Inglis. I'm assuming there's a familial connection there. Alex Mariani, Allison Steele in Pittsburgh. We love you, Allison. John Sweeney, another old-time friend of ours. Mark Tabbert, Peter Weinberger, and last but not least, Matt Cahillan. Matt, I know I've met you, and this is the second time I've probably murdered your name. So please do not let my mispronunciations of your names dampen the enthusiasm and appreciation that we have for you. So thank you to all those who participated in our year-end challenge. Welcome back, listeners. Here I am with Bob Eccles, a return guest to the podcast and a recently republished author, I guess I'm going to say, because you are already a published author, but you have a new book out. Congratulations, Bob.
So thank you very much, Chelsea. It's good to talk to you again, do another podcast, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about my book a little bit.
Yeah, well, the Republic EN team is a big fan of yours, and we consider you the biggest advocate for the EcoRight who does not self-identify as EcoRight. So thank you for everything you do to uplift us and our message and our importance in this climate fight.
Now, look, we're all in this together. And I think the way you describe me is good. I'm kind of a center left. I'm not far left, but I'm a center left Democrat that lives in Massachusetts. But I am a huge fan of the EcoRight. And the EcoRight actually informed a lot of my thinking in this book that I wrote that we can kind of talk about in a little bit. So
Yeah, so
thanks
what
again.
inspired you to write your book?
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious to anybody that's concerned about climate change how polarized it's become in the United States. And it's funny because it wasn't always that way. In the 1990s, you and I've talked about this before, in the 1990s, climate change was not a political issue. It was kind of an American issue. You had George Herbert Walker Bush, who signed the Clean Air Act. I think it was under Nixon, the EPA was formed. And then, not to kind of litigate the whole history of it, but I think what happened was that the left was paying more attention to climate change than the right was. And then it got bundled into a bunch of other liberal issues. And it was associated with, social issues and big government. And, conservatives just didn't buy into that. And then for a whole bunch of other reasons, America became polarized. And I think climate change became one of the sort of pillars in this debate where we just now kind of argue about it. And you have the climate activists on the left that have got a narrative of, everybody has to be vegan and we're all going to die, because it's an existential crisis. That's not going to resonate with the man and woman in the street. Then you got people on the right going, well, climate change isn't real and it's a Chinese hoax. And well, that's equally unhelpful because the science on this is pretty clear. I'll give you just a few statistics and then we can kind of, go wherever you want. There was a survey by Yale. 72% of Americans think climate change is happening. And most of them say it's, due to human activity. The rest, it's a combination of human activity and nature. So whatever the reasons are, it's happening. An even more startling statistic is that 88% of Democrats are frustrated by the polarization and the political disagreement around climate change. But that number is 73% for Republicans. So, yeah, it's higher for Democrats, but three quarters of Republicans aren't happy with this, polarization, of climate change. And so we have to do something about that.
And I think, having this guide that you wrote is even more important now because, here we are a year into Trump 2.0 and all the clean energy tax credits are off the books now. Like, there's really, he's trying to pivot into this resurgence of the fossil fuel industry that leaves America really exposed in terms of missing out on opportunities for really owning that clean energy economy. We're ceding billions, trillions of dollars to China and other countries that are going to pick up the mantle as we kind of retreat back and say, oh, fossil is best. And I'm not saying we can't have any fossil fuels, but we have to continue the transition that had already started, and it just feels like we're going backwards.
I think we are going backwards. I mean, the problem you get, and one of the reasons I wrote this book was, I mean, the central reason is to try and help change the narrative. But the goal is to create sort of more bipartisan policies that are stable. And the eco-right wants bipartisan policies. And I think my book won't be welcomed by the climate activists and won't be welcomed by the climate change deniers, but there may be, 10% of the population or something. So it's like I'm writing for everyday Americans. And so what you had under Biden was stopping liquid natural gas exports. Okay. Because he was putting his thumb on the scale one way. Now Trump is doing it the other. And so when the pendulum swings back and forth like this, and you have China, which is a dictatorship with all of the state support for renewable energy, they're building coal plants still, but they've kind of got this mantle of, there's this kind of green economy, which is an exaggeration. And they're using this for geopolitical influence. And I think that's dangerous. And right now, I think in America, this polarization around climate change, we're our own worst enemy. We're our own worst enemy. And the problem you've got is that it's the extremes that are the loudest. So what I decided to do, so the book, the title of the book is An American's Guide to Climate Change. I mean, I'm written this for Americans. I'm not writing this for the world. It's an American's Guide to Climate Change, How America Can Lead and Prosper. This book is short. It's 27,000 words. It's like 115 pages. This is what it looks like, I wrote it for kind of people with a decent high school education. You don't need to have a PhD in climate science or economics. And the message is really pretty simple. It's like, okay, Climate change is real. Here's the chapter on the science. The science is pretty clear, but I also talk about where there's uncertainty. And then the basic message is, okay, it's a huge challenge, but if we come together as Americans, we're great at dealing with challenges. This
We
is a huge
excel at
opportunity. It's a huge
challenges, right?
opportunity.
Yes. Thank you. I think that is so critically important. We do not have a history of backing down, right? And so that is what surprises me. And you alluded to this time in the 90s. I mean, George H.W. Bush, I don't know if you saw the film, the White House Effect, but he ran for president in 1988 saying he was going to solve climate change.
Oh,
And
I didn't know that. It's interesting.
so there is a documentary that just came out called The White House Effect, and it delves into how John Sununu, his chief of staff, was a climate denier, a guy with MIT bachelor's, master's, and PhD who thought, oh, phooey, that's nothing. We don't have to worry about that. It's all about the economy. And he really moved Bush away from his campaign commitment to solve climate change. Now, he left the White House before the end of Bush's term ended. And it's interesting to wonder what would have happened if Bush had won re-election, because then Gore coming in as VP and being so strident on climate change, kind of the beginning of those were sort of the beginnings of the divide. And then you had a fossil fuel industry that was like, well, all we have to do is cast doubt on the science and stoke fears that energy prices are going to go up. And that's really the playbook that exists today, right? When you talk to somebody who, and I would say there are probably fewer people who think it's a hoax than there are just people that aren't alarmed, right? They're just disengaged or they're not alarmed. And a lot of them have, it's all around energy prices. But as I think a lot of Americans are about to see with this kind of re-attention, new attention, refocus on fossil fuels, is that our energy prices are going to go up. They were going down because of the renewables that were coming onto the grid. And so climate change is an economic issue for sure.
I mean, it's an economic issue, and you've got, I mean, this White House effect. I didn't know about that document. I'll look it up, but it's interesting when you. I think that there's sort of two layers of reality that are going on. There's the rhetorical layer, of the climate activists screaming, it's an existential crisis, and then, the people on the right that are the climate change deniers and saying, well, it's not really a real thing. But when you look on the ground, and my book does this a lot. There's a lot of really positive things going on in both red states and blue states. So Texas, I mean, I did this particular comparison. It's not in my book, between Texas and California. 30% of their energy comes from wind, and it's like 35% when you add solar. Texas is adding wind capacity faster than California. Now, admittedly, California's got a bigger base. It's adding battery capacity faster. It's building up its venture capital and private equity. So in a lot of ways, Texas is really, I think, on the forefront of what's happening with climate change. But at the same time, you have these anti-ESG bills being passed, in the Texas legislature, which I don't think are helpful, and most of them are kind of silly. But in the book, I mean, I made a conscious decision in this book. I'm not trying to take sides between the Democrats and the Republicans, right? I've got my own sort of political views. This book is a positive message. It sort of points out all of the really great things going on in America. We are entrepreneurial. We are risk takers. I think what happened with fracking is a great example of American ingenuity that made us essentially sort of independent in a lot of ways from getting fossil fuels from other countries. And so if we could focus on all of the positive things that are happening, and recognize that our federal system, it gives the opportunity for experimentation in different states. And we need to sort of pay attention to both adaptation and mitigation. I think for a long time, it was no, if you're talking about adaptation, you're giving up on mitigation. Actually, those things can go together. And then one of the things that I've learned, one of the many things from the eco-right, is I like their focus. I mean, it's a more positive message. They're serious about climate change, but their focus on technology. And so it's not just renewables. I mean, it's geothermal and it's fission and it's fusion and it's other kind of moonshot technology. And in a lot of ways, the eco-right is I think very pragmatic. I mean, they talk about permitting and they talk about, needing to stabilize and improve the grid. I have a whole section in one of the chapters on the grid. So what I'm hoping will happen, and we can only expect so much from a single book, but at least it's a first attempt to say, here's another narrative. It's a challenge. It's a great opportunity for Americans if we quit fighting with each other, right? And kind of don't make fun of people that are vegans and don't look down on people that eat meat. It's just those cultural issues that are getting in the way. It is an economic issue, as you pointed out. And so what I'm hoping will happen, I wrote this book, not because I think I'm going to make a lot of money on a book, make money on books, right?
Not.
And if people read this book and they go, Bob, you're right. We need a new narrative. I don't think you nailed it. I think here's a better one. Man, I'm like so good with that because what I'm trying to do with this little book is create the space for 80% of Americans who can't spend their lives worrying about climate change, feel its effects on a day-to-day basis if we have policies that, get in the way of energy security and energy affordability. And the extremes aren't going to go away. But nobody is speaking for what I call the exhausted middle, right? I mean, most of America is in the exhausted middle. It's like, okay, this is coming. It's affecting us. It's going to affect our children, our grandchildren. Let's solve the problem. But we have to do that by coming together as Americans. Whether you're a Republican or Democrat or a libertarian or progressive, it's like I said, we're all in this together. And China is our biggest geopolitical rival, and they are beating our ass on this, as you said.
You are listening to the EcoRight Speaks podcast, brought to you by my fun and talented colleagues at republicen.org. I'm Wen Lee, Outreach Director, and I'm wondering, do you have a guest idea for the show? If so, let us know. We want to feature the voices you want to hear. In the meantime, enjoy Chelsea's conversation with today's guest.
I think that what you were saying a few minutes ago about your book casting a positive message is so important because the alarmism really turns people off, right?
Yep.
I mean, one of my closest friends, super, super duper liberal environmentalist, vegan, and she's so preachy about the vegan stuff that I don't like to go out to dinner with her. We're very close, but I find it uncomfortable and I'm in the fight, right? Like I'm here and I understand why she cares so much, but that turns people away. And I think seeing what opportunities there are, especially for making money and for showing our country in a great positive light, is really a path forward that more people need to be embracing and allowing these states to be incubators and to do what is best for states, right? So Texas is excelling at wind because they have wind, like the wind blows there and it blows strong, and they have so much land that they can have these huge wind farms. And they're not, California is a little more densely populated. And but then you look at states that are excelling in solar, right? Like if you let the places tap into the resource that they have in the greatest abundance of. In Texas, let's talk, when we're talking about abundance, you can't not talk about oil and gas, right? Texas is a huge oil and gas state, but it is also a huge wind state, and it can be both things at once. And so it doesn't have to be this either or that I think we're sort of stuck in as we get more and more polarized. It's black or it's white, it's this or it's that. But like all these things can exist at once, and we can work together, putting aside the party labels.
Well, they have to, all sort of go together. When you look at, as I said, I mean, China is growing renewable energy capacity. They're still building coal plants. And when you look at projections of world energy usage, the growth is largely going to be in renewables. But according to the IEA, the International Energy Association, which is, not a partisan group, if anything, it would lean left. Today, we produce 100 million barrels of oil every day. Every day, 100 million barrels of oil. Projections in 2050, 100 million barrels of oil a day. You've got 7 billion people, 8 billion people, whatever it is. They all want to improve their lifestyles. I think, Chris Wright, the new Secretary of Energy, I mean, I like his mantra of zero energy poverty, right? I mean, maybe there's some things he's doing I don't agree with, but yeah, I mean, people in these developing countries, they want to lead lifestyles, like we have in the United States and Europe. And so fossil fuels are going to be important. But as you said, it's like, okay, if you like renewable energy, then you have to eat fossil fuels and the other way around. And that's what's happening. And that's just, it's nonsensical. You know, it's ideological and it doesn't make any economic sense. But, you know, breaking through that is hard because you have the extremes on the left and the right that are sort of doubling down. And it's almost like they have to do it to maintain membership in their club, right? Otherwise, like you said, your friend, you can't really talk about your vegan friend. It's like uncomfortable. And then they just wind each other up, you know, so then they start, you know, calling each other names and stuff. And the exhausted middle is sitting there saying, you know, please, can we just solve the problem, right?
We have a dear friend of the of Republic EN who is from Utah. His name's Nick Huey, and he will be on a guest on this show this season. He calls himself a radical centrist, right?
Yeah,
And
that's a
his
nice
whole
term.
thing is like, let's be radical centrist, because that's where most people are, is in this like center band. And so you have to learn, teach yourself to filter out the noise and focus on the positive. And I hope that your guide will help people to be able to do that. Back to sort of that environmental left, I wonder if that model of the environmental sort of activism is dated. Right. Like it worked in the 60s and 70s. It got Nixon's attention. You said, I mean, he created the EPA because he needed something to respond to all of the campus demonstrations and stuff that were happening. We were obviously already in a war. So there was that level of protest happening. But we had the first Earth Day. And so he's like, OK, I've got to satisfy this very agitated constituency, and created the EPA. And so, I mean, I think in the past you have seen that activism lead to policy changes. But when was the last time we saw environmental activism lead to change? I don't think we've seen it in decades, probably. But it's agitating and it's out there and it spins people up and it furthers the divide. People on both sides, literally this for this example, are guilty of stirring the pot, right? So we have to focus on this radical center, the exhausted middle. I'm exhausted too, Bob. Like it's hard. And you know, do what America does best, right? Excel, make money, innovate. We're good at those things.
You know, there's enormous opportunities. We've got the biggest capital markets in the world. We've got, you know, the most venture capital money. We've got the most private equity money. The government has a role to play in, and I talk about this a lot in my book with RPE. The government has a role to play in funding very early technologies, but then they have to be commercialized. Once the technology has been proven that it has to be commercialized by the private sector. So kind of cutting back on that funding, doing a lot of the things the Trump administration is doing, is really unhelpful, and it's not going to be, you know, kind of good for the long term. I don't think it's, you know, kind of a death knell or anything like that, because things go in cycles. I think you're right. I mean, credit to the environmentalists. I mean, civil society and NGOs are the canary in the coal mine. I think they're really important for bringing issues to people's attention. But then if your theory of change isn't working, maybe you should rethink your theory of change, like this finance-centric theory of change, the financial sector is going to go net zero and save us all. I mean, that's just not plausible. But, you know, what you see is people doubling down, not everybody. And then on the right, with, you know, polarization, it kind of just left the climate change discussion, which we talked about earlier. And now you have the emergence of the eco-right. But, you know, they're 10 years old at best. You know, there's 8, 9, 10, 12. Their funding, I've written about this, is minuscule compared to the funding that goes to the left. And so an agenda of mine, kind of just beyond my book, around creating a common narrative, we need to see more funding going into the eco-right. They need to sort of find their own voice. They're in a difficult political environment to do it. I get it. But you need the center-left and you need the eco-right to engage with each other. And the ironic thing is, I find the people, and as you know, I know most of the folks, you know, in the organizations in the eco-right, I find them quite open to engage with the left. And the left, you know, a little bit more suspicious because they're Republicans and they kind of still think they have a sense of moral superiority. It's like, you know, the eco-right needs to kind of, you know, develop and grow up and get more funding and can get their voice.
I feel like the last time you were on the show, you gave a really startling statistic on annual Fundraising for one of the big organizations like Sierra Club or NRDC versus what the entirety of the EcoRight gets. And I can't remember off the top of my head what it was, but it's a fraction of what one major environmental group gets is, you know, maybe it's 1% or 0.5% or something spread amongst the many. I mean, granted, we're smaller, but EcoRight groups. And
yeah, there's like 1% of climate philanthropy goes to the right, to the EcoRight. And I think the Sierra Club was an example. I think they're 230 million, something like that off the top of my head. And I think the funding to the EcoRight, again, it's, you know, hard to get numbers and stuff. They're small, but it's maybe, I don't know, $20 million. Dollars a year, you know, on an annual basis. I mean, it's minuscule. It's minuscule. But
well, from your lips to funders' ears, that we need to grow our pot.
Well, what I tell my friends in EcoRight, we need to find. I mean, the left has its billionaires, like, you know, Tom Steyer and Bloomberg. We need to find, you know, right wing billionaires that know that climate change is important. And there's a whole important link, and I talk about this in the book around AI. Right. And there's all kinds of issues around AI I won't get into now, but it consumes a lot of energy. And so, you know, we need to deal with that. But again, this is a competitive issue with China. We need, you know, natural gas in the short term. You know, we need small modular reactors. We're losing the AI race to China as well as the renewable energy race. I mean, we are making ourselves geopolitically vulnerable. We are making ourselves economically weaker with all of this stupid fighting with each other.
Yeah.
When, as I said, you know, 73% of Republicans are frustrated with political disagreement. And so somehow the message needs to get to the politicians. And an organization, just to give a shout out, that I think is doing a great job is the American Conservation Coalition, you know, with Daniel Franz. I mean, they've got 100,000 members, millennials, conservative millennials in all 50 states, you know, supporting Republican candidates, you know, who are concerned about climate change. And here's the thing, and I'm going to see Danielle in a couple of weeks. Their two most active states are Texas and Florida, which gets back to this layer of, you know, anti-ESG political rhetoric because the right wing hates the left wing and blah, blah, blah. We don't like D&I and ESG. But then you've got, you know, these really active chapters of the American Conservation Coalition in Texas and Florida.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need more attention to that. More attention to all of the great things going on in states, red states and blue states. And somehow, you know, with my book is one way, we just need to kind of create this radical centrist, I like that term, conversation and, you know, let the extremes scream and let the rest of us kind of get on with solving the problem and taking advantage of the opportunity this problem has created.
Yeah. We need to get your book in more hands.
Well, that would be great. It's available on Amazon. It's pretty cheap. You know, like I said, you don't make money selling books unless it's, you know, something that becomes a movie.
Stephen King, right?
Yeah, I'm not Stephen King, but, you know, and like, I mean, like I said, I wrote this book so that it's consumable by, you know, by anybody. And it's short. It's 115 pages. And so I think if people buy the book and it helps facilitate conversations, you know, you do a great job with your podcasts. And I think, you know, kind of the more we can do together on this, if we can just, if there was kind of an objective in the climate community of finding a new narrative, a common narrative, and we'll have disagreements on policies and we can have disagreements on a whole bunch of other dimensions of policy and politics and stuff like that. But look, with my Republican friends, I mean, I probably disagree with them on more things than I agree with them. No surprise, right? Because I'm a Democrat. But there's really no white space between me and them when it comes to, you know, climate change.
And I think it's important that we all continue to find the areas where we do agree and focus there. And, you know, I think this is one thing where the environmental groups have suffered is that they started to take on a whole lot of other issues that weren't specifically the environment. And you have to, like, let's just figure out where we agree. Let's work on that. That was the mantra when I was a staff person on the Environment and Public Works Committee back in my Senate staffer days. We, sure, the chairman and the ranking member disagreed on a fair number of environmental policies, but they figured out the ones they agreed on that were pressing problems, and we got to work, and we found those compromises. And toward getting your book into more people's hands, We are going to buy a couple of copies and do a giveaway, but listeners will have to stay tuned for the next segment of our show to figure out how they might potentially
Well, thanks for that.
Copy. So we'll do our part to try to get it in more hands. And I just encourage all our listeners to, you know, get out there, go on, you know, whether it's Amazon or you can probably order it from your local bookstore, but An American's Guide to Climate Change, How America Can Lead and Prosper. And I think prosper is the big key word there. So, Bob, thank you so much for writing this handy guide and for just being one of our greatest allies. We really appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your time to talk again and give my book a pitch. And I hope we can all come together and change the narrative. It's good for America.
We have to.
Don't go anywhere, listeners. My favorite part of the show is coming up. I'm Angela Lark, the Engagement Director at RepublicEan.org, and I love listening to Chelsea and our producer, Price Atkinson, wrap up each episode with their thoughts, jokes, minty banter, and of course, a preview on next week's show. So stay tuned. That segment is coming up next.
Price, welcome back after a long cold break.
Yeah, happy 2026. Hope you had a great holiday. It seems like it's been ages since we were at that point, but we have turned the page literally to 2026 and to season 12, a brand new season of The Eco Right Speaks. Here we are and here we go.
Here we go. And we know probably that for this first episode, anyway, those listening in real time, you may be snowed in or iced in because at the date you and I are talking, we're still in these really terrible tundra-like temperatures, but it is going to snow again, so they say. So anyway, plenty of time to listen to the Eco Right Speaks is what I'm getting at, because Who can go anywhere? Even though I got my car dug out, there's no guarantee I could park anywhere I might want to go. And then, God forbid, what if somebody took my spot? I would cry.
Well, yes, for sure. And we hope everybody is staying warm. And if it is your first time listening, we're glad you're here. We're glad you've tuned in and caught this first episode of season 12. Certainly many, many returning listeners. So we always appreciate you just as well for coming back for another season and downloading, listening, subscribing. So thank you. And thank you to Bob Eccles for being our first guest to start the year, because Bob is
hitter for our 12th episode season.
Bob with his new book out the very beginning of the year, which you guys talked about, obviously, but Bob is, I find a lot of humor in Bob, not that it's humorous, the topics, but Bob is just very wittingly honest, if you will.
Yes.
And so I love that. I appreciate that. And I think it's great.
That's why I love conversations with him. And definitely, Bob, if you're still listening at this point, we'll have you back anytime, because we, as Price mentioned, we love the way you frame the topic, and you're so smart, and you just bring an interesting perspective. And like I said, the biggest fan of the Eco Right who does not self-identify as Eco Right. So kudos to Bob and Price. We have a pretty good lineup for this upcoming season. Next week, I'm excited to bring our listeners a little blast from the past with Nick Huey, big ideas man out in Utah. You know, he's been in our orbit for a long time, and so we're excited to connect with him and catch up with him. Utah being not only one of our target states, but a state that has, you know, really deep concern for environmental issues, as Nick will detail in that conversation. So don't miss that coming to you February 10th.
Yeah, the great conversation with Nick. Can't wait to bring that to everybody next week. And then, I know we got more in store coming up for the first couple episodes, but certainly as people get ideas, especially if you're a first timer, you certainly can go back and listen to past episodes. But if you've got an idea for a topic, for a guest, for an episode, please hit you up, you being one Chelsea Henderson that I'm looking at right now. So,
well, you know, Bob, just to continue the Bob thread a little bit, Bob Eccles, that is, gave me about 15 names of people he thought would be good on the show. So I'll definitely be tapping into some of those ideas as well.
Yep, absolutely. And we certainly always appreciate those ideas and what you have. So Chelsea, let's give a shout out to some new members because we would love to have you stand with us if you're not already doing so. Republican.org/join. It takes mere seconds. Doesn't take long at all. So we would love to have you as a member of the EcoRight speech community. We don't spam you. We correspond several times a month to get your engagement, to get your opinions. And without further ado, let's shout out the first set of new members of the year. Neil O. in Massachusetts, Billy L. in Alaska, Jennifer S. in California, Michael S. in Colorado, and Josephine E. in Pennsylvania. So we appreciate all of them and then others that we did not reel off right there for standing with us, Chels.
That's right. You're so important. And we're so happy to have you here. And, you know, it takes a village. So you're our village. Thank you for being there with us.
Yes, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the award-winning Climate Weekend review that you get from Chelsea on Friday afternoons in your inbox. It's always a fantastic roundup of what's going on that week, you know, in the climate, environment, energy space. So that will be coming to your inbox when you sign up to stand with us. So, Chelsea, without further ado, we're off and running in 2026. We will see you again next week as we get ready for episode 2.
I'll see you then, Price. Oh my gosh, are you still listening to the show? No, we did not forget. Okay, maybe we almost forgot. We are giving away 3 copies of Bob's book. And so if you want to be a winner of this handy guide for how to talk about and solve climate change, the first 3 people, I'm going to just make it real easy. I don't want to have to do a lottery or pick a winner. So first 3 people to email me, Chelsea at republicen.org, and suggest a guest for the show will win a copy of the book. So what are you waiting for? Get on it now.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the EcoRight Speaks podcast, brought to you by the team at republicen.org. You can listen to past episodes of the EcoRight Speaks podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And make sure to visit us online to find out how you can sign up to stand with us at republicen.org.